Good afternoon, everyone. Let's get started. My name is Ganesh Srinivasan. I'm a program manager in the Windows Azure networking team, and I'm extremely happy to be here to be talking to you all about some of the cool new features that we've released last week. So, you know, as you all know, you know, we've spent a lot of time essentially doing fundamentally changing Azure. And last week, we announced that we are essentially supporting infrastructure as a service in Windows Azure. And to enable such a big release in Azure, we've had to, you know, make a lot of changes to Azure's infrastructure, as well as introduce new features to support virtual machines running in Windows Azure. So I'm going to be spending a lot of time talking about all the investments we've made. So, but before I get start talking about some of the features that we put into Windows Azure, I wanted to spend some time talking about what we've done to the Azure infrastructure, the data centers, and how we've essentially re-engineered the networks in our data center to support running virtual machines in Windows Azure. I'll then talk about some of the existing concepts that we have in Windows Azure in terms of networking. Just a show of hands, how many of you have in the past deployed hosted services in Windows Azure? How many of you clearly understand the concept of endpoints? Not many. So let me review that concept with you, because everything that I'm going to talk about beyond that is essentially going to be built on the endpoints concept that we've introduced. I'm also going to be talking about new investments we've made in terms of scenarios. So all the investments we've made apply equally to both platform as a service roles that we offer, the web and worker roles, as well as for virtual machines that we've introduced last week. So it's going to be exciting to see some of the demos that we've put together to showcase some of the features. And towards the end, I'll touch upon what we've done to enable hybrid scenarios in Azure, but we've got a full session on hybrid scenarios later tomorrow. I'll be going into detail on what options we offer in terms of configuring virtual networks and setting up cross-premises connectivity to link your corporate networks to Azure. So that's coming tomorrow. So let's get started. So Azure has historically been a platform as a service provider, which means we expected customers to host applications that primarily serviced content to the internet. So we had a lot of web-facing applications that were running in Azure. So we had a network in Azure that was essentially optimized for north-south traffic flowing from, you know, the internet to Azure and back and forth. So our network was not really suitable for running workloads that were east-west intensive. So if you had, let's say, a huge amount of data stored in blob and you were reading and writing excessively, our network did a good job of it, but it was not really optimized for handling something like that. If you've all seen what Mark Resinovich presented, and if you attended the talk by Corey Sanders earlier today, we've made a lot of investments to support virtual machines, and we store all the VHDs in blob storage, which is in our storage clusters. So for us to support virtual machines in Azure, we essentially have to have a very fast network that is optimized for east-west traffic. So what we did was we fundamentally re-architected our network to scale to meet the needs of the scenarios. So essentially, we've migrated all our, we are in the process of migrating all our data centers, but quite a few data centers out there already have this new hardware in place. We have new high-density servers queues that have gone into our new data centers. We've got 10 gigabit Ethernet in all our servers, right from the top, from the server to the top of the rack switch and above. We have a very optimized network, which is, you know, not very oversubscribed. So it's an extremely low oversubscription ratio in our network. So you will not have any bottlenecks in your network. So what this means is that we have a very flat network, and it offers an extremely predictable and consistent latency and throughput experience when you talk between virtual machines, or when you talk to storage, or when you talk to other services hosted in Azure. We also have essentially N paths from server A to server B. We typically try to place servers in different racks for failure resilience. And when we do that, we have N paths. So even if a router in between fails, we have N minus one paths that essentially share that load. So typically what we do is an active-passive. From that, we've moved to this N is to one redundancy. So you will not see a sudden spike in load if we have some infrastructural issues in Azure. And also, you know, we offer load balancing as a service, and we've moved from using traditional hardware-based load balancing solutions to our own homebrewed software-based load balancing solution that can scale and shrink on demand and sustain the load that we have. Now, these load balancers that we've put in place are, you know, unique in the sense that they are actually Azure tenants that are running in the same cluster as your VMs and your hosted services that you run in Windows Azure. So it is a clear example of what we've done in terms of using our own products to build services that power the infrastructure. So the software load balancer also enables us to essentially build new features and support new features easily. So all the features I'm going to be talking about next are made possible because we've made investments in doing everything in software and primarily our software load balancer. So just to give you a difference, so if you look at our old network and the new network, our old network was traditionally layer 2 based to a certain extent, so you'd have to go all the way up to the AG router to essentially talk between two virtual machines that were across racks. So you'd have to go three levels up in a highly oversubscribed network. Now our top of the rack switches are routers, so you will go from server to server in exactly the same number of hops, so that's extremely optimized. We've also gotten rid of active-passive configurations and hardware load balancers that are extremely expensive and troublesome to maintain. So one of the major causes for us in terms of managing our infrastructure was all the issues that we had with load balancers. With introduction of software load balancers, the reliability of our load balancing service has actually gone up significantly. So having seen the network, let's look at what we offered you, the customer, in terms of how you could leverage the network. Typically, you deploy hosted services in Azure, and the new name for hosted services is cloud services. And for every cloud service, we had deployment slots that we offered you. We had a staging and a production slot for PaaS. And for every slot that we offered you, we offered a virtual IP, which is a public IP address for the service. So if you had foo.cloudapp.net hosted in Azure, it came with a VIP that was assigned for it. But there were no port mappings assigned to the VIP, so the VIP existed as a floating entity. It was not mapped to any real server or any entity out there. For you to do that, you would actually have to define an endpoint. An endpoint is nothing but a port that you ask us to open up in the infrastructure. What we do is when you say, for my particular role, if I had a PaaS tenant with five web role instances and I wanted to open up port 80, you would define an input endpoint and ask us to open up port 80. We would do two things. We would open up the firewall in our infrastructure layer to allow traffic on port 80 to your virtual machine. We would block all other traffic to your virtual machine at the infrastructure layer. And we would also program the load balancer to distribute the load across the various role instances that you have defined in that particular role. So if you had a web role with five instances in them, we would actually program the hypervisor layer in each of the hosts to open up port 80 to that particular virtual machine and program the load balancer to distribute it across the virtual machines. If any of the instances died, we would recreate another instance to replace that and program the load balancer to automatically point to that. So that way, defining the input endpoint gives you the gateway to internet. So if you want to connect to the internet on the inbound path, you would have to define an input endpoint. In the case of PaaS, we had role instances that had to talk to one another. And since we've closed all the ports, we need you to let us know what ports we need to open up to allow inter-VM communication within the same service. And you would do that using an internal endpoint. And for an internal endpoint, you could either specify a port or a port range. And when you do that, what we do is we know your hosted service boundary. Any VM that's deployed within your hosted service is trusted for communication, and we open up the firewall to allow traffic on those specific ports between these virtual machines. Another thing that's important for us to communicate is essentially name resolution. So if you had a service that's running in Azure, say foo.cloudapp.net, and that needs to be mapped to your VIP, we actually offer that as the DNS service that's powering Azure offers you that as a service. So you could map foo.cloudapp.net to that VIP, and you could do resolution of your service. But if you wanted to talk to virtual machines as part of the PaaS instance, you would have to use the Fabric runtime APIs that we published. So if you wanted to enumerate all the role instances and connect to them, you'd have to use the runtime API. So as you can see, it's okay for PaaS applications, but not really suited for infrastructure as a service. So starting with this as a base point for SDK 1.6, which was released early this year, we've made significant enhancements in pretty much every one of these areas, and that's what I'm going to be spending the rest of the time talking about. And I'm going to be talking about it in terms of the scenarios that these things enable. So by adding support for a lot of these new features, we've opened up Azure for hosting a lot of new scenarios. So one of the limiting factors here is the fact that on the inbound side, we only supported HTTP and TCP. You know, that limited a whole bunch of workloads from being run in Azure. And also allowing inter-VM communication only on TCP was a big limiting factor. So let's talk about what we've done. So over the next 45 minutes, I'm going to talk about the investments we've made in Azure to enable essentially gaming and media streaming in Azure, which translates to the ability to support UDP and a few other features in Azure. I'm going to be talking about how you can actually connect to an instance behind a load balancer and directly do monitoring and debugging of instances that are in PaaS. I'm going to be talking about what we can do in terms of enabling enterprise workloads from a networking perspective hosted in Azure. And tomorrow, I'm going to be talking about all the investments we've made in essentially linking your enterprise networks to virtual networks that you can create and manage in Azure. So tomorrow evening, I have a session where we will cover that in detail and how that enables hybrid scenarios in Azure. I'll then talk about all the investments we've made for geo-load balancing. You can essentially deploy the same service across the globe and geo-load balance based on various policies, DNS policies. You could do it either based on performance or round robin or failover. I'll talk a little bit about that. And then I'll touch upon the solutions we have for hybrid, but the deep dive would be tomorrow. So let's get started. So if you wanted to host a media streaming service in Azure, typically the desired protocol for media streaming is UDP because, you know, TCP sometimes is slow. Due to packet loss, it does weird things. So people prefer UDP for media streaming. And another key scenario that heavily relies on UDP is essentially massive multiplayer online gaming systems, where if you wanted to run games and you wanted to partition users and send them to different loads, UDP is the preferred mode of transport. And for setting up any of these things, you also need the ability to route traffic to various instances. So if you're running a huge game and you had different game rooms that you wanted to direct people to, you would want to direct them to different servers. You want the ability to connect to each of those servers as well. So we've done stuff to enable those things. So at a high level, you need UDP traffic both on the inbound path and UDP between virtual machines, and you need the ability to connect to each instance behind the load balancer. And we've enabled that for both PaaS and IaaS instances. And it's going to be extremely easy to do that, so let me actually give you a demo of how we could do that. So I don't know how many times you've seen this, but this is the new Windows Azure portal. We've made a lot of investments in this. The portal used to look like this, and we've completely transformed it to look like this. So our application platform team has spent a lot of time essentially redesigning our portal from scratch. And it makes it extremely easy for you to configure various features. If you've already got a virtual machine up and running, you can actually look at the virtual machines and configure it. In this particular case, I've actually configured a media streaming server, and I want to stream media using RTSP, which is one of the protocols you use for streaming media. And RTSP uses a standard set of UDP ports and a bunch of TCP ports that you will have to open up. So this goes back to defining input endpoints. The way you do endpoints for virtual machines is through this tab called endpoints. So you can go and add and delete endpoints as you choose in this tab. It's very simple to add an endpoint. So if I wanted to add, let's say, a UDP endpoint on port 500, all I'd do is click on this add endpoint. I could choose whether I want to do a load balance endpoint or not. I'll talk about load balance endpoints in a bit, but let's now talk about how you can set up a simple simple endpoint in Azure. You'd give it a name. Let's say I wanted to open up port UDP 5000 for my application. All I had to do is pick this protocol. Now, our load balancer also does port mapping, so you could expose one port publicly to the customer and map it to another port internally. So if I wanted to do that, so let me show you an example where I do that. Let's say you connected to your service colon port 5000 on UDP, and you wanted it to be directed to port 200 in your local machine. All I'd do is configure the public port to be 5000 and the local port to be 200. So our load balancer automatically maps these ports and delivers the traffic to the virtual machine. So by just that click, I've now defined an endpoint for a virtual machine. UDP port 200 is open in the virtual machines firewall at the infrastructure layer, and port 5000 is opened externally for communication. Now, we've only done it at the external, at the infrastructure layer for virtual machines. So if you're running, let's say, a Windows-based virtual machine or a Linux virtual machine that we announced support for, you would actually have to log into the virtual machine and open up the firewall ports to enable traffic flow between the virtual machine and the infrastructure. Now, that's how easy it is to set up an endpoint in Azure, and we've created a UDP endpoint. It takes a couple of minutes to for it to be applied. But as you can see, I've also defined other endpoints for that virtual machine. By default, when you deploy a virtual machine through our portal, we create an RDP endpoint, so you could actually remote desktop into the virtual machine and manage it effectively. For media streaming to be enabled, I've actually opened up TCP port 554, and I've opened up a couple of UDP ports, UDP port 5004 and UDP port 5005. These two are required for the media streaming service to work. And this is part of this virtual machine that is mediastream.cloudapp.net. I've set it up as a cloud app, so you can use that URL to actually connect to it. Now let's look at the virtual machine. So I'm going to remote desktop into the machine again just to wake it up. So as you can see, it's just, you know, through endpoints. We connected to this virtual machine through the RDP endpoint that we've already defined for the virtual machine. So you're connecting to the virtual machine through the endpoint that we defined. The other thing is that it's now a vanilla Windows Server 2008 R2 VM that's running in Azure, and you could deploy whatever application you want. In this particular case, I've deployed the streaming media service, and I've actually put some sample content in here. And since I've opened up the endpoint, all I have to do to access this media is open up media, Windows Media Player, specify the URL. I've used the protocol RTSPU, which forces it to use UDP as the transport protocol. And as you can see, mediastream.cloudapp.net is the actual service URL, and industrial.wmb is the file that I actually want to stream. So that's it. So it's as simple as that. You define the endpoints, you open up the endpoints for the virtual machine, deploy the workload, and boom, it just works. So now let's get back to the slides. So as I mentioned, you just saw in the portal on how we could define UDP endpoints for virtual machines that you deploy through the portal. The same thing is supported through PowerShell and all the command line tools that we've introduced last week. So I'd urge you to go and look at windowsazure.com and look at all the tutorials that we put in place to make all these things accessible to you. If you're using web or worker roles in Azure and you really want to open up UDP, it's very easy to configure endpoints in the service definition schema. So all you do is, in terms of protocol, specify the protocol as UDP, and we automatically open up UDP at the infrastructure layer. And for past tenants, we also program the guest VM's firewall and open it up. So you can have UDP traffic working for your web and worker roles as well. Now let's talk about a unique requirement. So a lot of people, you know, when we introduced PaaS and we said you have one WIP and you have opened up a single port, but you have 10 VMs or 20 VMs behind it, people really wanted to have access to each VM behind the load balancer. And they wanted to do it specifically for monitoring. You wanted to know the health of your application, or you were trying to develop an application and you wanted to have your debugger hooked to your application so you get information, or you wanted to essentially profile the application and get statistics fed back to you. And that was not really possible because all the instances were behind the load balancer and we never gave you access behind it. So what we've done is we've introduced this concept of port forwarding. So typically when you configure a service with an input endpoint, you specify the input endpoint, so we program the load balancer and we distribute the traffic across the various instances that we have out there. But now you want to have a monitoring service that wants to connect to every instance behind the load balancer, and we want to make it happen. So we've introduced this new kind of endpoint called instance input endpoint, and this is PaaS specific. So if you have a past workload, if you had 10 instances and you wanted to connect to each instance on a particular port, you could do that. And the way you do that is that you use a new kind of endpoint called the instance input endpoint. And this is very similar to the input endpoint in the sense that you specify a local port. That's the port on which we want to connect to every virtual machine on. But you would also specify a port range. And this port range has a range. So from, in this case, I've chosen 1001 to 1010. So if you had 10 instances, you can address the first instance using port 1001, the second instance using 1002, and so on. And if any instance gets service healed, we will refill that port number when we bring the virtual machine back up. So if you had 10 instances and you wanted to do debugging, you'd connect to your foo.cloudapp.net :1001 to connect to port 5000 on the first VM. So this makes it extremely easy for you to monitor and debug applications that we are running in the cloud. I have a very exciting demo to show you, but I'm going to show you a demo for this closer to the end of the session, so stay tuned. That's really an exciting demo, and we loved putting it together. So let's now talk about enterprise workloads. We've talked about cases where we're opening up ports and simplifying things, but we really want to talk about what we've done, you know, to complement all the investments we've made in infrastructure as a service. So we've made a lot of efforts to enable you to run virtual machines. So the primary goal of doing that is to have you move your existing applications from your premises to the cloud, and they should just work. It should not require modification of applications or writing anything extra to make that happen. So that's a key requirement that drove us to make a lot of enhancements. So we also want to enable you to move applications in a phased manner, which is really hybrid. We want you to move certain tiers of your application to the cloud, while if you have a requirement where my database has to stay in my premises, but my applications can actually, you know, my front end, which is stateless, can really move to the cloud. I could do that as well, and we really want to support those kinds of scenarios as well. And we, as I mentioned earlier, we want to complement all the investments we've made in virtual machines, which means special requirements for, you know, running SQL Server in Azure or a SharePoint farm in Azure or an Active Directory domain controller in Azure. We've been closely partnering with all our internal teams to make sure that all their requirements are covered from a networking perspective, in addition to making sure the virtual machines run by themselves. So let's look at what it means. So it means, you know, when you're running an application, you want high availability. So if I had a bunch of IIS servers as my front end, I want them to be load balanced, and I want some sort of failover capability to be enabled. I want, you know, in the case of PaaS, as I talked about in the beginning, name resolution between instances is through a runtime API. Now, as I mentioned, for infrastructure as a service, you shouldn't really be mucking around with code or changing anything with the application. You just want to refer to the other tier or another virtual machine by name, and it should just work. So we've made some investments in DNS. Also, it's annoying to open up an internal endpoint for every port to talk, you know, between virtual machine A and virtual machine B. So you want unrestricted IP level communication at the infrastructure layer between virtual machines in a single service. So you want that to be done. And you want support for hybrid scenarios. And we've worked on all these things. So let's talk about what we've done. So let's talk about load balancer for a minute, and let's talk about how load balancer works in the case of platform as a service roles. So if you had web and worker roles, we actually have a guest agent running in every virtual machine that does a whole lot of things. Among the many things it does, one of the things it does is it responds to a probe request sent by our load balancer service. So when the agent in the guest VM responds to the probe, we know that the guest is actually healthy, and we actually direct traffic to that guest VM. Now, one thing that happens is if the application dies but the virtual machine is healthy, we still direct traffic to that, and that's not really desirable. So if you want to really do load balancing based on the health of the application, you can do that going forward. I'll talk about how you can do that. Now, this also, the problem to solve for us was the same as if you wanted to support load balancing between virtual machines. Now, let's say I had two IIS servers. They are two distinct VM entities that have state, and we want to be able to distribute traffic between them. You can specify the two VMs, create a load balancer set, and distribute traffic between them, but we still wouldn't know what the health of the virtual machine is. So we'd just randomly distribute traffic. So we'd want to know whether the application is healthy or not, and we want to send you a probe, and we want to have you to respond to a custom probe that you define. That would enable us to essentially distribute load between various virtual machines that you have running in Windows Azure. So we've enabled support for both these with this release, and all that can be done using the portal and using the service model. So I'll talk about those in a bit. You know, related to load balancing, as I mentioned earlier, in the case of PaaS, PaaS is fundamentally different from IaaS for us in the sense that the various VMs that constitute a tier are packed together in the form of a role. A role groups all the role instances that perform the same task. So if you defined a web role with 10 instances, they're modeled as a single role, and we know that port X has to be opened across all these roles. But in the case of virtual machines, we've chosen to, this is an artifact of having infrastructure as a service run on top of a PaaS platform. We model each virtual machine as a single instance role. It gives the entire port range, the number of endpoints that you can define and all that. There are benefits of doing this. But you still want to load balance between the various instances here. So we've enabled support for creating load balance sets, tying it with probes, and essentially distributing load across various virtual machines. Now, doing probes also enables a few cool things in the sense that you can run applications in active-passive mode if you choose to. You can have VMs talk to one another and figure out who's the leader. You can have your own leader election algorithm in place, and the active one responds to the probe while the passive one does not. So at that point in time, all the traffic will be directed to the server that's actually active. And this is extremely useful if your application is extremely stateful and you have to direct traffic to particular virtual machines. So probes are extremely powerful, and they can be used in many different ways. One, to take virtual machines in and out of rotation based on the application health. Two would be to essentially do active-passive configurations with virtual machines. And you can do a whole bunch of fancy stuff with this. So this support is not just limited to infrastructure as a service or virtual machines that you run in Azure. We also support this feature set for a platform as a service virtual machines. And the way you do it is you'd model this in your service definition schema. You'd define a load balance set. You'd define the protocol and the port for that. And you'd also define a port the same way. The only difference is in the case of a port, you'd specify, in the case of a probe, you'd specify the probe path to be probed, as well as the interval for probing. So once you've specified those information, you can actually, the good thing about configuring the probing interval and the probing timeout is you now have control over how often we ping you and when we time you out. So in this particular example, we've defined a probe, and I've defined the probing interval to be 10 seconds. So every 10 seconds, the load balancer will actually probe the virtual machine. And if you've defined a probe on TCP port 5000, all you have to do is have a listener on TCP port 5000 that accepts the connection. And we know that once the three-way handshake goes through, the virtual machine is actually healthy, and we know how to direct traffic to that virtual machine. Now, if you want to take the virtual machine out of rotation, all you do is stop responding to probes. And we've defined a timeout of 21 seconds here. So if you've missed two probes, we know that the virtual machine is down or should be taken out of rotation, and we take it out of rotation. This easily enables you to do active-passive configurations for both PaaS and infrastructure service as a service virtual machines. And I also wanted to show you the PowerShell snippet. This is the only place where I think I've shown PowerShell snippets. So this is the way you actually define endpoints and actually add a load balance set and a probe to it. So it's extremely easy to do it using the portal, PowerShell, as well as service models for PaaS. So now let's talk about Azure provided DNS. As I mentioned earlier, if you had two virtual machines running in Azure, you really can't use the runtime APIs that we support for identifying the other instance and talking to it. You really want a DNS service, and you don't want a heavyweight DNS service. So what we've done is we've provided our own DNS service, and we've used our own DNS service to offer name resolution between virtual machines that are part of a single deployment. So if you had virtual machine, you have, let's say, test VM 1 and test VM 2 that are part of the same service, and that you want test VM 1 to talk to test VM 2. So what test VM 1 could do is, who's test VM 2? Our internal DNS service that we have will essentially respond with the IP address of the virtual machine, and you could connect to a virtual machine. And we've built it as a true multi-tenant service. So if you had someone else sitting in some other service, trying to maliciously figure out what your virtual machine names are or trying to figure out what your IP address is, that will be blocked. So we know the tenant boundary and we ensure isolation. So no one else can know the names or IP addresses of your virtual machines that are hosted in your deployment. And this enables you to run, you know, just take your SQL Server or any simple application that you have and migrate it to Azure. So let's say you are running a SQL Server reporting service, a very simple service. You can take the three tiers as VMs from your enterprise, from your premises, just take the VHDs, move it into Azure, set up virtual machines, and the same names you used just work. And the cool thing about our DNS service is if you actually log in and change the name of the virtual machine, you know, you log in and change the name through your standard Windows UI, the name actually gets changed and we re-register the new name in our DNS service. So if you change the name, every time you change the name, we re-register it and the other VMs can resolve it by name. So that's something that we've enabled. And you can do multiple things. This works for both infrastructure as a service and platform as a service. So if you have an entire service using infrastructure as a service, you have three IIS servers that are load balanced talking to a SQL Server, the same thing will work. So you can always talk to the SQL Server by name or any of the instances by name. Let me get to this and I'll go back to showing you the demo. So in this case, if you wanted to do the same thing for platform as a service, if you've used our old portal and if you've used platform as a service, you always see RD followed by a weird random number that's your VM name, and it's not really user-friendly. So what we've done for PaaS is given you the ability to specify the VM name. So if you specify the VM name as my web VM, for every instance in that particular role, we suffix it with the instance count. So if you had 10 instances, the VM names would go from my web VM 0 to my web VM 9. So this way, you have a predictable name. So if you're building applications where you have web and worker roles talking to persistent virtual machines, you have predictable names to use to address your PaaS instances. So now let's get back to probing, load balancing, and Azure provided DNS. So in this particular case, I've actually set up two virtual machines in a service. I've called them Probe VM 1 and Probe VM 2. So if you looked at the cloud service, that's called Custom Probes. If you look at the instances, these two are load instances that I have. And I've actually defined an endpoint that's actually load balanced. I've opened up both the web and SSL endpoints for it. And if you can see, I've load balanced it. So for high availability, if you look at edit endpoint, it says that I've used VM1, Probe VM1 and VM2, and I'm actually load balancing traffic between two virtual machines that I've defined. This is not PaaS, this is IaaS, and you can load balance between them. And the same thing for SSL as well. I don't know what I did. So we've defined probes for both these virtual machines, and I have these virtual machines. Connected here. As I mentioned earlier, this is just a virtual machine running IIS, and it's got a simple website running on it, and it's part of this cloud service called Custom Probes. So if I actually went to this URL, I'd see a very simple web page that's displayed here. Now let's do something. Let's actually go to the virtual machine, one of the virtual machines, and stop IIS from running. So even if traffic was directed to it in the past, by stopping IIS, I've also defined a probe on port 80. Now, since IIS is down, I will not get a response when I probe port 80. So if traffic was directed to this virtual machine, it would have to be redirected to another virtual machine. So I can go back here, clear my cache, just to make sure that I'm not hitting the same virtual machine again. And I go back to that URL. It works. It's because I have two virtual machines that are load balanced, and I've set the probe on port 80. Just even after killing one of the virtual machines, the other virtual, all the traffic that was destined to that automatically gets routed to the other virtual machine. So this way, probes work. Now let's go back to that virtual machine. So this virtual machine is ProbeVM1. I know that by host name. I know the other VM that I've set up is actually ProbeVM2. So I should be able to connect to it by just specifying the name. So I'm just going to say so when I said just ping probe VM2, we automatically knew where to look up. We have our own, the Azure provided DNS service. It suffixes it up with your tenant ID followed by a few other information just to make it, you know, so that we can identify it and we can isolate you. And based on the suffix, we do your isolation. So all that is there, and you have ICMP connectivity between the two virtual machines. So there are two things that you can see. One is the fact that you can resolve any other virtual machine that's part of your service by name. And the second thing is the fact that I've opened up ICMP. You have IP level connectivity between the two virtual machines. I could TS into the virtual machine as well. So you get the idea. So we have entire IP level connectivity opened up between the virtual machines, and you really don't have to define any special endpoints to enable this for virtual machines. And in the case of platform as a service virtual machines, all you have to do is define an internal endpoint with protocol equals any. We support this new keyword called protocol equals any that opens unrestricted IP level connectivity between various PaaS instances. Now, this enables a whole bunch of scenarios. You could use dynamic ports in your applications. So certain applications that use WCF that rely on dynamic ports can be run both on platform as a service virtual machines as well as infrastructure as a service virtual machine. So they can freely pick and choose the port range that they actually want to and communicate over them. So as I mentioned, we showed you a bunch of features so far, and I wanted to actually show you one demo that one of our close partners, Exit Games, has set up for us. They unfortunately couldn't make it here to be with us on stage, so I'm going to be demoing it on their behalf. So what it is essentially the Photon Server is essentially a gaming platform that enables you to, it's an SDK cum gaming platform that enables you to build a massive multiplayer online game using their SDK. So it essentially, you know, they have clients that are multi-platform. They run on both mobile as well as, you know, desktops as well as Mac and any platform. And they primarily rely on UDP and WebSockets and TCP and a whole bunch of protocols to run their gaming applications. So we're happy to, you know, to have been working with them. And now, you know, with our latest launch, they're going to offer their gaming SDK to be, you know, supported in Windows Azure as well. So you could very easily set up a massive multiplayer online game hosted in Azure. And they have a very beautiful architecture. So what they do is when a client, you have to download a client application to play this game. So the client application essentially talks to a master server for the gaming system. That's a service that's running. It connects to it on UDP port 5000. And they've defined an input endpoint to do this so that load balances between two master servers that they have. And essentially, the master server has information on all the other players and all the game rooms that they have in their gaming system. The two gaming servers actually are in active-passive configuration, and they have an internal endpoint on PaaS for doing leader election on port 4000. So they use probes to figure out which of the two instances is actually active at that point in time, and the traffic gets directed to that. And the leader election, they communicate between one another through the leader election port. Once you communicate, connect to that and you know what game room you want to go to, you actually connect to various servers in the game server tier. And each the way they've set it up is that you have different rooms in which you can play the game in. And one server constitutes one room or one or more servers. So if I wanted to have all players wanting to be in a particular room, I would direct them all to a single server. And I do that by having the client point to that particular port. So I can actually steer players playing in the same room to the same server. That way, the latency and the experience they have in terms of figuring out the other person is extremely low, and they have a great experience. As I mentioned, it does a great job. So let's, you know, actually go and look at this game. So it's a client that comes with the game, and I can open to it and connect to it. And if you look at it, I just wanted to show this. This is actually hosted in Azure. If you look at the cloud services, I have a cloud service that says Photon TechEd 2012 US. This is actually the service that's actually driving this game. And so in the gaming client, if you look at it, I specify Photon TechEd 2012.cloudapp, and I've specified port 5000. That's the port for the master server to connect to get game room information. So I'm going to create a room right now, and it's going to host me in a particular server. And here I am. I'm actually playing. Look at the VIP of the game. So it's actually connecting to 168.62.37.174 on port 7001 over UDP. There's a round-trip latency of about 45 milliseconds. Now, this game is hosted in our US East region, so it's pretty close to us. There's a 44 millisecond latency round-trip. And you can actually see the byte sent and byte received. And I can actually shoot, walk around, and do all that, and the room is actually hosted in Azure, and the player information is managed by the client. So this is really cool, and you can see the VIP for the service listed here. It's 168.62.37.174, so we are actually connecting to that server to play the game. So this particular game actually helped tie a lot of these investments we've made together. First of all, we've enabled UDP. Games are able to run because of UDP. They're able to load balance between, you know, and configure instances in active-passive configuration using custom probes. They're able to do leader election in the backend using internal endpoints on port 4000. They're able to connect to various server instances behind the load balancer and direct customers to the particular game room, based on port forwarding and direct ports that we've enabled. So with all these things, you know, this is a great demo to show in the sense that it helped tie all the investments we've made together, and it's a pure PaaS application at this point in time. The same thing would work in, if you were to run these on a virtual machine as well. So let's switch gears a little and talk about Traffic Manager. Now, you want to build an application and host it in Azure, and you want to make sure that it's available. It has a very high availability rate, which means if a particular region has a problem due to connectivity or something, you really don't want to be restricted to that region. You want to have the clients connect to another region. So what we've done is we have this new service in preview called the Windows Azure Traffic Manager. The Traffic Manager is essentially a DNS policy engine that essentially enables you to distribute traffic across services that you've deployed all over the world. So if you've had a deployment, let's say, in Europe, another deployment in Asia, and another deployment in the US, traffic can be routed to each of them based on DNS policy. So you could do various policies. You could essentially do round robin, or you could do performance where you get connected to the closest instance, or you could do failover where if one instance is down, automatically point to the other instance. So all that is done by a DNS service that we run in Azure. So as I mentioned, if you had multiple services deployed all over the world and you configured it for performance, if someone in Asia connected to it, they would be directed to the service in Asia. If someone from Europe connected to it, they would be directed to the service in Asia, Europe, and the one from America would be connected to the service in America. And they will all be, you know, if one of them fails and you have a policy where you're doing it for failover, they will automatically be directed to the next closest service. So let's say the service in US was down because of some unforeseen circumstances. We would direct your traffic to Europe or Asia based on where you are and based on what the DNS metrics are. And it's the cool thing about it is it's extremely easy to set one up using n clicks of the mouse, and I'll show you how exactly to do that. And this gives you an option to essentially make sure that your applications are equally responsive across the globe, as well as the fact that if something happens to one of the services, you can fail over to another, the same service hosted elsewhere. And it's extremely easy to set up. So let's look at how this actually happens. Now, if you look at the cloud services view here, I've actually deployed a simple web page in three different regions to actually showcase what we can do with Traffic Manager. So I have a Wartum demo in Western Europe, West US, and Southeast Asia. And just to give you an idea of what's there, in each of these places, I have a different picture showing up. I have Southeast Asia shown up here with a different picture. West Europe with a different picture. And US West with a completely different picture. So, and you can see the tags of names that I've put here. Now, I also have created a bunch of load balance policies. The one thing that we are working on is the fact that since it's in preview, it's still supported in the old Windows Azure portal that we have, and we are actively working towards migrating this to the new portal so you have a great experience in the new portal. But till then, it's equally easy to set up a traffic manager service in Azure. So I know that I have three services and I want to create a new load balancing policy. I know that I want to do it between Wartum demo Southeast Asia, West Europe, and US East. I can choose the policy based on that I want to enforce. So I could do performance, which means I get to pick the closest service and connect to it. I could go to failover, which means if one service fails over, I move to the other, or round and robin, I distribute between one. So let's create one for performance. And I do this by probing the service to know whether the service is healthy or not, and what's the latency between all that. So for this, I've defined the probe to be on port 80, and it's just going to go to this path to figure out whether it's healthy or not. And I'm going to call it watm.trafficmanager.net. And I'm going to set the probing interval to be 30 seconds. So every 30 seconds, this gets probed, and I know the health of the application at any given point in time. So by just doing this, I've created a new load balance policy called watm.trafficmanager.net. And I can actually connect to watm.trafficmanager.net from here, and it'll get directed to the closest service, which should be US West. So you get connected to US West when you go to that. Now, just to show that you get different IPs from different regions, this is a standard DNS service that's out there that essentially gives you the IP addresses that you resolve to from various DNS resolvers all over the world. So I'm going to do watm.trafficmanager.net, and it's being resolved by various DNS resolvers in various regions. So if you see US West, US in Florida, we resolve it to 168.62.16.186. From Amsterdam in Netherlands, you go to 168.63.9.92. And from Hong Kong, you go to 111, 221, 104, and 243. And let's go back to the portal and check what the IP addresses are. So for West US, it was 168.62.16.186. And that's what we hit from US. From West Europe, it was again another 168 address ending with 92. And for the service that we've deployed in Southeast Asia, it's a 111 address ending with 243. And that's exactly what the DNS servers all over the world resolved them to. So by just reaching the same URL from different DNS resolvers, you get to different services. Now let's talk about my favorite topic, which is hybrid. So we've actually spent a lot of time and energy in enabling hybrid applications, and we've worked a lot in trying to make the experience as simple and as straightforward as possible for everyone, and we wanted the adoption bar to be as low as possible. And I personally have spent pretty much 95% of my time working on just one of these projects that we've listed here. Now, hybrid means a lot of things to a lot of people, and one, it could mean moving mass amounts of data from the premises to the cloud. And if you're doing database migration, SQL Azure Data Sync is a great option to go with. If you're essentially writing new applications that are truly distributed, you can use the service bus to essentially use the pub-sub model used in service bus to essentially distribute traffic and have applications talk to one another. But if you're stuck with, you know, with infrastructure as a service, or you have an applications from a third party that you really can't modify, we have solutions that essentially enable infrastructure level connectivity between your premises and Azure. And one such solution that we introduced last year, which is in public preview right now, is Windows Azure Connect. It's essentially an agent-based model that essentially links your premises, your virtual machines in your premises to services running in Azure through a cloud-based relay service. And it's essentially machine-to-machine connectivity. But the real cool stuff that we worked on over the past year is in enabling site-to-site connectivity between your premises and Azure, so you can actually view and treat Azure as just another branch office that's residing in the cloud. And we've invested a lot of time and energy in giving you the ability to create virtual private networks in Azure. You can bring your own private IPv4 address space into Azure and connect the virtual networks in Azure to your premises using a site-to-site VPN solution. So these two are the two offerings, Windows Azure Connect and Windows Azure Virtual Network, are the two offerings that we offer for hybrid connectivity. Windows Azure Connect has been in preview, and it's going to be in preview going forward, and we're gathering feedback on that. We like the experience. But for an enterprise-class application, Windows Azure Virtual Networks is something that we released last week, and that's what we think is going to, you know, enable hybrid scenarios and enable you to migrate applications from your premises to the cloud without any IT blockers. So with Windows Azure Connect, what you really had to do was you had to deploy an agent in a virtual machine and in every machine on your premises that you wanted to connect to services running in the cloud. Whereas in Windows Azure Virtual Networks, what you have to do is set up a site-to-site VPN solution in your premises. You could use any industry standard VPN solution. You could use a Cisco or a Juniper or any standard industry standard VPN device and have a VPN tunnel established between your premises and the virtual network. We manage the gateway and the Azure side for you, so you don't have to set it up and configure it. And you have unrestricted IP level connectivity between your premises and the cloud. So you could actually route traffic back and forth. You could have applications where your front end is sitting in Azure and your back end is sitting in your premises, and you draw data from your database and back and forth. So that's going to be possible with the virtual networks offering that we put together. So I'm going to be spending about an hour and a half tomorrow from 5 to 6:15, where I'm going to go into how you exactly go about setting up virtual networks in Azure, what's possible and what's not. In addition to the fact that you can actually set up the site-to-site connectivity, virtual networks by itself brings a lot of goodness in itself. It offers a stable IP address for every virtual machine that's running in Azure. So even if for some reason the virtual machine is killed and recreated, maybe due to some infrastructure problem or because the service is bad, the IP gets to stay with it. And this makes it possible for us to run, you know, DNS in Azure, domain controllers in Azure, and, you know, this essentially enables us to support running SharePoint farms and complex deployments running in Azure. So the ability to create virtual network is going to be extremely powerful. And the other thing that it offers you is the fact that it extends the trust boundary. So in the case of a service that you deploy in Azure today, only roles and role instances that are part of the same deployment are allowed to communicate with one another. But when you deploy these services in a virtual network, we've actually extended the trust boundary to that of a virtual network. So you can actually deploy each tier as its own application and actually have each application talk to one another, you know, over IP. There's no restriction on ports or port ranges or anything, and all that will work efficiently. And the best thing is the fact that you can manage your applications using your on-prem domain controllers. You can, when you create your virtual network, make it point to your Cart DNS servers for name resolution. So whenever you create a provision of virtual machine in Azure, you can domain join it to your corporate domain. You can also domain join web and worker role instances to your Cart domain and enforce group, you know, apply patches, update virus, antivirus signatures, do whatever you want through group policy. It also enables you to do monitoring. So if you had System Center Operations Manager or any monitoring service that you have that monitored the health of the virtual machines or applications in your premises, you can use the same solution to monitor the health and of your virtual machines and applications running in Azure as well. So I'm going to dive deep into that tomorrow, and I'm going to have a lot of demos showing how you can set up various scenarios. I'll also talk about how the SharePoint site that Mark Rasanovich and the Aflac team showcased during the keynote by Satya Nadella. I'm going to show you how that was constructed based on a virtual network and how you could set up SharePoint farms and complex applications in Azure using these cool new networking features that we've introduced. So with that, let me summarize what we've seen so far, and then I've got about 15 minutes where I'm open to any questions that you may have. So let's start with the input endpoint. So when you connect it from the internet with SDK 1.6 or till last week, all that you could do was you could load balanced HTTP, HTTPS, and TCP traffic. Now we've introduced support for load balanced UDP traffic coming into Azure. And in addition to that, since we've supported virtual machines, you can load balance across virtual machines. You can probe virtual machines for their health and actually distribute load based on the application's health. And on an internal endpoint basis between VMs, we only allowed you to open up TCP-based ports or port ranges for communication, and you had to do it in every VM and every instance, every role in, when you defined your role in the service definition. Now, for virtual machines, you want unrestricted IP-level communication between the virtual machines. So that's enabled. We enable any IP-based protocol, including UDP, for VM-to-VM communication. And when you deploy a virtual machine, you don't even have to go and do anything explicit to enable this. We automatically do this for you under the covers. In terms of name resolution, the only thing we offered was if you had a VIP that's mapped to foo.loadapp.net, we only had that A record that was mapped. Now, going forward, from last week, you can now have our DNS server enable you to resolve VM names. So if you had two VMs running in a single service, you could use our name resolution service to resolve names and connect to it. This makes application migration extremely simple. We have a Windows Azure Traffic Manager service that enables you to do geo load balancing. So if you had the same service deployed in multiple regions across the globe, you could actually use this service to geo load balance based on various DNS schemes for performance or for round robin or over failover. So this gives you high availability for your service running in Azure. And finally, we've made a lot of investments in network virtualization and enabling virtual networks in Windows Azure. This is really the networking on-ramp to enable you to move applications from your premises to the cloud one tier at a time. So you can actually have, the experience of managing your applications in Azure from your premises using a single pane of glass and essentially using your on-prem identity management software like domain AD to manage the virtual machines as well. So call to action. So all the new features that we've introduced as part of the SDK 1.7 release that's available in windowsazure.com for download. The windowsazure.com page also has a new set of tools. All the PowerShell tools are also available in windowsazure.com. If you go to windowsazure.com, manage and downloads, you have a link to all the PowerShell. In addition to PowerShell for Windows, we also have command line tools that support Linux and Macs as well. So you have tools for all these platforms that you can use to manage all the features that we've talked about. The new features around virtual machines are essentially in preview, so it's by sign up. If you go to the beta page in your Windows Azure portal, you can sign up for these features if you already have a subscription, or you can sign up for a 90-day free trial for this service and request us to enable infrastructure as a service on all these virtual machines. So you get to try out all these features, cool new features yourself. And it's free for if you enable the free trial, it's free for 90 days, or there's a quota that goes with it. I've set up an email alias where I'd like to hear from you on what your feedback is, and if you had any questions or if you have any comments on any future features that you'd like to see that I really can't talk about here. And finally, we have a forum page in MSDN that we've set up where if you have any trouble setting up any of these things or have any questions around how you want to do or how you want to realize a certain scenario, you could feel free to post questions there, and our team will be more than happy to answer any questions that you post out there. So there are also a whole bunch of related sessions that are happening at TechEd. So there's an overview of virtual machines and how they work that was delivered this morning. There are a whole bunch of other applications that are worth attending. one on hybrid, and I'm going to be talking about virtual networks in particular and how you can link your premises to the cloud in AZR 316. That session is tomorrow at 5 p.m., I think, in one of the rooms right here. And please leverage all the resources that you have at TechEd. And in addition to that, there are a whole bunch of hands-on labs and demos set up downstairs. Feel free to try out one of those if you have a chance. And you can always feel free to reach out to me, either through the alias or I'm going to be around in the conference too if you have any questions. That's all I have. Thank you. So I'm ready to take any of your questions. One request I have is if you have a question, please go to the microphone nearest to you to ask your question. Since this is recorded, a lot of people can benefit from the questions that you ask.
Do you happen to know if there's a white paper available, maybe a best practice on how to deploy SharePoint, in this environment, IaaS environment?
So we've just released our preview last week, and so far the basic tutorials we have are on setting up virtual networks with cross-premises connectivity, deploying Active Directory, which is a key component of setting up SharePoint. But we've not really documented setting up SharePoint. We are actually working on it right now. So you can see that in the MSDN pages pretty soon. So we wanted to phase it out and get it out there, but it's definitely something that we're working on that will be out there. In addition to that, we will also document how to set up SQL mirroring and a few other interesting scenarios. How do you deploy past tenants and infrastructure as a service VMs? So you could have your front ends running as stateless VMs, web roles, talking to SQL servers in the back end, and how you can build a service like that and how you actually move applications in phases. And a lot of people in our team are also blogging about it, so if you monitor the forums and the WindowsAzure.com portal, you'll, all this information will be available pretty soon if it's not already there. Thank you.
Hi.
Hi.
We are using BizTalk server as a middleware application.
Mm-hmm.
If you move the BizTalk server in this new environment, mm-hmm. what will be the roadmap, or what is the Microsoft roadmap, or is there anything on the way? Mainly, it's talk application to application.
Mm-hmm.
So we are using WCF adapter mm-hmm. or SQL adapter, mm-hmm. those type of type. Like, if you move the BizTalk server into this environment, mm-hmm. what will be the communication path, or what is the direction we need to go for?
So essentially, let me talk about how we say we enable certain applications or we support certain applications in Azure, and then I'll go on to talk about BizTalk in particular. Mm-hmm. So whenever we say, let's say, for example, when we announced, we said, hey, we support SQL Server 2012, SQL Server 2008, and SQL Server 2008 R2. And we support Active Directory in Server 2008 R2 and Server 2012. And we support SharePoint Server 2010, and we're working on Share. So what we do is we actually partner with each of these product teams in Microsoft's, have them run their entire suite of tests on Windows Azure, and then they certify that, hey, everything is great, everything works, and we sign up to support it if someone needs help with that. So that is what means we officially support that service. So far, for our preview, we've worked with the SQL team, SharePoint team, and Active Directory team, and we've made sure that pretty much all the key scenarios that they wanted to see running in the cloud have been validated both by us and by the product team themselves, so they sign off on it, and they will own supporting these features on Windows Azure. That said, we are also working with a whole bunch of teams, of which BizTalk is one of them. We know that it works, but we have to wait for the product team to essentially go through the entire testing phase that they do and certify that it works. And also, we have to, in addition to just making sure that the application works, we also have to work on licensing schemes and see how licensing schemes are set. And then we will announce that it is supported in Azure. It's something that's definitely in the works and something that you can see in our platform pretty soon. Okay. And in terms of communication, setting it up and all that, it's just going to be, the one thing that I would say is it would be good if you could attend the virtual networks talk where we talk about how to set up a whole bunch of infrastructure services that talk to one another and how you set up a domain controller. That would give you an idea of how you can set up a service that's multi-tier, and have them deployed as separate services that can talk to one another. So the way you deploy the application is going to be very simple and straightforward, and it's not going to be very different from what you do on premises.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? So thank you very much. I'm going to be around in the conference in the Windows Azure booths. So if you have any questions around networking in general or Windows Azure in general, please feel free to stop by our booths, and we'd be happy to answer any questions you have. Thank you.